Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 45% off select styles and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 45% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Annie Fry Show.
Well, there's a lot to discuss today, and we're going to get to all of it. But before we get into the business, I just want to let you know that Annie is not going to be here today because she says she sounds like a frog. I have not heard her to confirm whether she actually sounds like a frog, and that's close to the truth or not. Brad says she sounds a little bit more like Chuck Grassley. And in fact, let's go ahead and bring that up right now and just see if that's what...
She was a person that left politics out of the prosecution.
Now, is that Annie or Chuck?
That's Chuck Grassley.
Chuck. Okay, so I'm gonna go more frog here. So that is the situation that's happening today. We have a White House press briefing that's happening right now, so I'm sure they're going to talk about Gaza. They're actually, the reason for the briefing is transgender sports executive order that President Trump is signing today. So we'll dip in and out of this. Lots, obviously, to cover. But let's start with the YouTube live chat poll of the day. It's grade Elon Musk and Doge's efforts so far. A, B, C, D, F, as we usually give you four choices there. B, C is one choice. Let us know what you think. A lot of people commenting on this. And since we're getting into the business of things, let's give you an idea. I think you kind of have an idea the way you feel, maybe the way Republicans feel, the president feels. How do Democrats feel about Elon Musk and Doge?
And we will win.
We will win.
We will win. We will win. We will win. We will win. We will win. We won't rest. We won't rest. We won't rest.
No one elected Elon Musk to nothing.
That's right.
Not one Democrat in America voted for Elon Musk.
What we're not going to do is stand around while they pull this bull. We are going to be in your face. We are going to be on your.
We will see you in the courts, in Congress, in the streets. Elon Musk is a Nazi nutball baby.
Every movement needs a scrappy little. And I am that person.
I need each and every one of you to get in touch with your inner scrappy little.
Nobody elected your. This is not Elon Musk's country.
Take your foot off my neck.
We are at war.
Oh. Okay. you know, all that we're trying to do is just cut. Government waste. Right? I didn't know that was how you would react to cutting government waste. That seems a little extreme. do you think that, Brad, that they're actually that mad at Elon Musk, or they're just mad at everything.
just mad.
They're just mad.
Just mad. No, I think they are actually that mad at Elon Musk. I think whenever he hit and Doge went after USAID, and we had Jim Carafano on yesterday, and he talked about this a lot, like a lot, how they use this as a possible money laundering scheme and stuff like that. I think he hit them right where it hurt, which is the pocketbook, and they are really livid about that.
It's not going to stop either.
No.
This is the tip of the iceberg as far as cutting government waste. It's not just cutting government agencies, it's the money.
Mm-hmm.
It's the money that is funneled through, and dare I say,
not
laundered.
The money. Your money.
Your money.
If you pay taxes, this is your money that they're doing this with.
Through these agencies with zero accountability. I mean, they were doing things that, do you really think Joe Biden knew what USAID was doing to fund, as Elon Musk put it, they were propping up certain regimes, funding candidates in certain races overseas. Do you think Joe Biden had anything to do with that? There's no way. So they were not concerned when it was their people in charge and just kind of running the rein. Nobody was at the wheel. It was whatever they wanted and really unlimited funding.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking with a couple people this morning about this issue. This really is at the heart of the way big unelected government works. This is it. That's why there's so much
mm-hmm.
anger.
Yeah.
Is because they're getting at the heart of this thing, which Trump did not do in his first term. He didn't really know how deep these roots went. And then they defeated him through whatever means in 2020. And tried to keep him from ever running again. They tried to bankrupt him. A couple people tried to kill him. Everything possible was thrown in his way to keep him from getting back to where he is right now, because he knew. Because that now he knows how deep it is. Now he knows how fast he has to operate and how deep he has to cut on these things. And that's why they're freaking out. Now, let me ask you this question. The argument levied against Elon Musk by these people, they're so mad. You know, they're saying that it's undermining democracy that he's even there because he's unelected.
All of those accesses are cut off. So we might actually see somebody get killed.
We have to fight this in the courts. We have to fight this in the Congress. We have to fight this in the streets.
What's happening right now is a hostile takeover of the U.S. government.
Shut down the Senate!
Okay, there's much more to that, but that's just like another supercut of people saying, and these aren't random TikTok people losing their mind in their car.
No.
These are Congress people,
yes.
And the leaders of the media saying that we're in now an oligarchy, apparently, that is run by unelected people, and they're all targeting this on Elon Musk, okay? And so, okay, let's listen to the actual argument, which I'm not sure is a really strong one, because anytime people are just screaming, you wonder if there's a real argument or if it's just emotion. But let's dig in and try to find that nugget of the argument. This guy is unelected, and what's the problem with that? Well, he has access to information,
mm-hmm.
and nobody elected him. Okay. Do you think that all of the people at USAID are elected?
Zero people.
I think the head of it has to be confirmed. He's not elected.
No.
But there's at least a confirmation process for the person who runs USAID. Mm-hmm. You just never hear about these things because they're rubber stamped through Congress. So other than that person, this is an organization that has roughly 10,000 people working for it, as far as I've seen reports. Of those 10,000, how many people are elected?
Like zero.
Well, the answer is zero.
And zero.
If you include the one who goes through Congress, then 9,999.
That's the most oversight.
That's it. So are you concerned that all of those unelected people had access to your information every day? You're not?
But they're not concerned about Elon Musk having access to your information. They're concerned about Elon Musk having access to their information,
but that's my point. All of these people, these 9,999 people who worked at USAID for the last multiple decades, they all had access to your information, and none of them were elected. So I don't think your argument really holds a lot of water, considering all of these people who've constantly had access to your information. Yet, it is a threat to democracy somehow, because I'm yelling loud enough.
I tell you right now, people are going to die in very large numbers around the world who are expecting the United States to live up to our promises to get them medicine, to get them help.
We have got to tell Elon Musk, nobody elected you. What we're in the face of right now is an authoritarian takeover of our country, and we say hell no!
If this were happening in any other country right now, I promise you, I'd be on the air calling it a coup.
I don't think you would, Joy Reid. That is Joy Reid from MSNBC. You know how I know that this isn't actually some sort of fascist coup? Because if it were a fascist coup, people like that wouldn't be allowed to be in the media. That's what fascists do. They shut down all dissent. There's plenty of dissent in this country right now. So I think we're alive and well as far as the democratic process goes. It is just amazing to see people melting down over this issue. Now, there's a lot of issues going on right now. Trump is moving faster than I ever even thought possible. Every single day, there is a new whoa headline. I walk into the living room. I'm usually somewhere looking at news at night, and my wife is on the couch reading a nice book by the fire. And by the way, everybody in St. Louis is sick. Every single person I know, other than Brad Range, who is standing across from me, who's actually a little under the weather himself, is sick in this city. Everybody in my family, Annie's not here because she's sick. There is so much going around. But I walk in to my wife, and she's sitting there trying to recover too. And every night, it's been, listen to this.
Yeah.
Last night, it was, can you believe what Trump and Benjamin Netanyahu, which I didn't even know they were having a meeting, what they got together and said they're going to do with Gaza. Oh, my gosh. We're, of course, monitoring this right now. I think Carolyn Leavitt is doing a press conference and still talking about the White House's action to protect women's sports. But we're gonna keep working on that and get to that a little bit later in the show. But there is so much happening that when I hear these people melting down, and that really is the best word for it, when people are having, I mean, the point of it is look at me. When you have a press conference, you're either there to share information or you're there to share your face with the world and your message. Chuck Schumer had a press conference and has had a press conference basically every day where he is running chants. They can't figure out what to do because everything they know is being washed away. The foundations of their power are actually being hit right now. That's what they're scared of. It's not a Republican in office. We've had Republicans in office before. It's when then you go after this stuff, they lose their mind. And by the way, speaking of Chuck Schumer, it ain't working.
This trade war has awoken a sleeping giant. Not Canada, not Mexico. But the Democratic minority Senate leader, release the Schumer!
It's going to affect beer, okay? Most of it, Corona here, comes from Mexico. It's going to affect your guac, because what is guacamole made of? Avocados.
I've listened to that clip 20
times.
That is
wild, dude.
Your response to the trade war is to f***ing tell us guacamole is made of avocados? Is that what? And the people found out when...
Those speeches, man, those speeches, I pulled this up. I'm going to play a little bit. You'll recognize this as a speech that Dwight Schrute made on The Office. And it's got just about as much substance as some of these speeches that we've been hearing this week. You can see if I can get the sound on for you.
Have you ever asked yourselves in an hour of meditation
which everyone finds during the day, how long we have been striving for greatness. Not only the years we've been at war, the war of work, but from the moment, as a child, when we realized that the world could be conquered. It has been a lifetime struggle, a never-ending fight, I say to you, and you will understand that it is a privilege to fight.
It's just it's listening to speeches and you go, what are you even yelling about? It's been the Democrats all week. And look, I'm not trying to rub their nose in it, but when they're trying to get your attention and it's so substanceless, it's pretty amazing to watch, amusing to watch, really. This is the Annie Fry Show. Well, we really do have kind of a fun day planned here. There's so much happening. If you miss a day of the news right now, and look, we're in news, so it always feels like it's going fast. I've never seen it like this before, where literally every day the news is so much bigger and new than yesterday that you forget that we were supposed to be in a trade war 2 days ago that got canceled. I mean, that's this stuff is happening so fast.
Oh my gosh.
That I think all of America, I keep getting nervous that America is gonna back out and be like, oh, this is too much.
I don't think they have time to dwell on it.
But
anything.
So far, that ain't happening. His approval numbers are through the roof. You look at panels and things of people, politicians and polling. It's all maintaining. Why? Because these are the promises. This is exactly what he ran on. This is exactly what people voted for. And so the fact that he's carrying out what he said he would do is actually increasing his popularity in a lot of ways. Will it stay that way forever? Probably not. He's going to make some missteps. There's going to be stuff that you and I, even as conservatives who voted for Trump, there's going to be stuff that we go, eh, I don't think that was maybe the right move. That's what happens. And it will happen. And I guarantee you, there are Democrats that are going to be screaming,
and we will win!
Like that, the minute, came in a little hot there, the minute he steps out of line, the minute that number starts to fall a little bit, that's all you'll hear, because that's all they have, because he's in charge. This is the Annie Fry Show. This is Ryan Wiggins filling in. We do have a great show for you today. Stick around, more coming up. All the time.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Hey, I'm Josh Fink, owner of Knicks Menswear. Getting married? Don't rent some random suit. At Knicks, we help you own the look for about the same price as a rental. You're marrying the love of your life. Don't you deserve a suit that's yours forever? Knicks Menswear, your friend in style.
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing digital deals for members. Coca-Cola, 7-Up, Dr. Pepper, and Polar Seltzer, selected varieties and sizes, buy two and get three free of equal or lesser value, plus CRV. Limit three free items. USDA Choice Bone-In Ribeye Steak, $7.97 per pound. Limit two packages. Creamy Hass Avocados, 77 cents each. Limit four items. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season two on Apple TV+. And we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season one and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season two. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
U.S. will take over the Gaza Strip, and we will do a job with it, too. We'll own it and be responsible for dismantling all of the dangerous unexploded bombs and other weapons on the site, level the site and get rid of the destroyed buildings, level it out, create an economic development that will supply unlimited numbers of jobs and housing for the people of the area. Do a real job. Do something different. Just can't go back. If you go back, it's going to end up the same way it has for 100 years.
Well, I don't know about you guys, but when I saw that last night, I immediately said, oh, you can do that? I didn't know that was an option that was even on the table. Whether or not they actually go through with this, is it a Trump tariff kind of thing where he's like going to use it as leverage? I have no idea. But your reaction when you heard this yesterday?
My jaw dropped. My jaw dropped. But the more I think about it, the more I'm like, maybe this is a way to stir the conversation to get something moving on Gaza because the status quo isn't working.
Ethan?
I think that I saw some pretty good memes about it. I saw a couple of pictures. It was like Gaza in 5 years, and it was like the exact same thing, except there was a Trump Tower, and there was a couple of like fast food restaurants.
Yeah. I think I've seen some of the same stuff.
But I mean, the thought of it is interesting. It was kind of one of those things like, can this actually happen? And seeing all of the work that he has done so far, it's one of those like, well, he's making so much happen quickly that it wouldn't be the craziest thing in the world. I don't know if it can happen, but if anyone could make it happen, it'd be him.
Yeah, this is just one of those that, when you asked before, you know, in the last 2 years or since October 7th, 2023, you would say, well, what is the solution? And nobody had one. And so when you hear somebody actually give a solution, even one that was not really one you were thinking would happen, you go, oh, let's listen and consider, because there have been no solutions. Because the solution, I have a lot of thoughts on this, and we'll get to them later. But the solution can't be, let's just do what we've always done. That's not an option. You can't just keep doing the same thing you've always done. You're going to get the same results.
If you get the same results, that'd be a problem.
So Carolyn Leavitt is the White House press secretary. She is taking questions right now, and Brad has pulled
great
up.
Great to see you here today.
They've asked this question, actually.
On Gaza, the president has spent basically his entire public career criticizing foreign entanglements, nation building, sending American troops to fight abroad, particularly in the Middle East. This plan seems like it could ultimately involve all of those things. Can you explain this reversal and how building and owning Gaza squares with America First foreign policy?
I would reject the premise of your question that this forces the United States to be entangled in conflicts abroad. The president has not committed to putting boots on the ground in Gaza. He has also said that the United States is not going to pay for the rebuilding of Gaza. His administration is going to work with our partners in the region to reconstruct this region. And let me just take a step back here, because this is an out-of-the-box idea. That's who President Trump is. That's why the American people elected him. And his goal is lasting peace in the Middle East for all people in the region. And as I said in my opening remarks, we've had the same people pushing the same solutions to this problem for decades. And it's been made very clear to the president that the United States...
Do we lose it?
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's just go to Trump on this because I've got a little bit more audio from him.
Everybody's demanding one thing. You know what it is? Peace. We want peace. We want people to stop being killed. But everybody's demanding one thing. Very simple. Peace. And he wants peace also.
All right. I think we got it back. So we're going to go back to Carolyn Leavitt.
To ensure stability in the region for all people. But that does not mean boots on the ground in Gaza. It does not mean American taxpayers will be funding this effort. It means Donald Trump, who is the best deal maker on the planet, is going to strike a deal with our partners in the region.
Because he did not rule out American troops in Gaza last night. Are you doing that now?
I am saying that the president has not committed to that just yet. He has not made that commitment, and you know that.
And on the foreign partners, the Jordanians, the Egyptians, the Saudis have already panned this plan. What foreign partners, if any, have expressed any interest in being part of it?
Well, the president has said he's been socialing this idea for quite some time. He's been thinking about this. He said in his remarks last night, this was not a decision or an announcement that he takes lightly. And the president has already spoken to the President El-Sisi. In fact, that was his first foreign leader call. He's meeting with the King of Jordan, King Abdullah, next week. He spoke with the King of Bahrain. He spoke with the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia. And he has made it very clear, he's been very vocal, that he expects our partners in the region, particularly Egypt and Jordan, to accept Palestinian refugees temporarily so that we can rebuild their home. I'd like to show you some images of Gaza that were taken. Fox News aired this. I mean, that is, as they put it, in an apocalyptic scene in Gaza. This is an uninhabitable place for human beings. Do you really think that families can live their dream in a region that looks like this, with no running water, no electricity? And the special envoy to the president, Steve Witkoff, recently traveled to Gaza, as you all know. And he came back with images that he showed the president of the dire situation here. And the president made this decision with a humanitarian heart for all people in the region.
Caroline.
Peter.
Thank you, Caroline. Are any officials here preparing to fight Democratic lawmakers in the streets?
Absolutely not.
So
and thanks for the question.
Some elected Democrats are so steamed about Doge. Congresswoman LaMonica McIver says, we are at war. Mm-hmm. Ilhan Omar says, we might actually see somebody get killed. And Chris Van Hollen says, we have to fight this in the Congress. We have to fight this in the streets. So what now?
And may I just point out, if you heard that type of violent, enticing rhetoric from our side of the aisle, from Republican leaders on Capitol Hill, I think there would be a lot more outrage in this room today. It's unacceptable, the comments that have been made by these Democrat leaders, and frankly, they don't even know what they're talking about. Because President Trump was elected with a mandate from the American people to make this government more efficient. He campaigned across this country with Elon Musk, vowing that Elon was going to head up the Department of Government Efficiency, and the two of them, with a great team around them, were going to look at the receipts of this federal government and ensure it's accountable to American taxpayers. That's all that is happening here. And for Democrat officials to incite violence and encourage Americans to take to the streets is incredibly alarming, and they should be held accountable for that rhetoric.
It sounds like something that they're most concerned about is DOGE engineers with access to Treasury systems. Can you clarify? Do the DOGE engineers have read-only access
Yes.
in these systems? So they are not allowed to write new code?
No.
They are not. Okay.
No.
And then one more thing. NBC is reporting that some of the illegal immigrants that we've seen rounded up and arrested mm-hmm. are not being deported. They're being released with ankle or wrist monitoring devices, or they have to check in on the phone. So is the administration arresting more people mm-hmm. than you have room for?
I have seen the reports, and I'm glad you brought it up because we want to address it. There have been a total of 461 illegal aliens, this is of this morning when I got this information from DHS, that have been released from custody of the more than 8,000 that have been arrested since President Trump was inaugurated. It's less than 6%, and there are reasons for their release. Some of the factors include a lack of significant likelihood of removal in the foreseeable future, lack of detention availability, which is something this president and this administration has been incredibly vocal about. We are doing everything we can to deport and detain illegal immigrants, but we need Congress's help to increase funding for Border Patrol and for ICE to increase detention capability in our facilities. And then other serious medical conditions have also been the reasons for some of the release of these individuals. But none of them have final deportation orders. Many of them are probably contesting their immigration status. I'd refer you to DHS for more details, but I did get that information because I knew it would be a question. So thank you.
White House Press
Sure.
Secretary Carolyn Leavitt there. That was a couple questions from Peter Ducey from Fox News. Before that, it was NBC News, wasn't it?
Yeah, Garrett Hake.
Garrett Hake from NBC News. So let's take these one at a time real quick here, because I thought there was a lot of information. Nice pull there, by the way, because there was a lot in that couple minutes. The first part about the questions about Gaza, I thought that was a good question from him about how do you actually plan on implementing this? Because that's the question that Trump is going to have to figure out, and Netanyahu and everybody else who's associated with this thing. How do you actually implement this if none of the surrounding countries are willing to take the refugees? That's a big, big
yeah.
question. And what her answer to that was, well, they're talking. So she's not saying, oh, no, no, you got this all wrong. She's saying, no, you actually have this right. Right now, they're saying no. We expect them to change their mind.
We expect them to say yes.
So we'll see. But that's, if it were anybody else, I'd go, eh, we'll see. It's Donald Trump.
Yeah.
He tends to pull the right strings and get these things done.
Well, And to me, this is kind of like what I was saying. It's everything's stale. Everything's flat. When the soda's flat, sometimes you got to shake the bottle. And whenever he said, we're going to take Gaza, that shook the bottle. I mean, you can't argue with the fact that people like Twitter blew up. Everything blew up. The first question in today's press conference was on this Gaza thing. He's shaking the bottle. And I think he's doing that so that we can come to maybe some new ideas to find something different.
Well, people are commenting in the chat. I pulled up a comment from Dale that I thought was really good. And actually along the lines of what you're saying, Brad, he said, this is Trump's style. He's getting into the head of the other Middle Eastern countries, hoping Saudi, Egypt, and others will say, never mind, we'll clean it up and take the people. Trump hates perma war. I think that's a very, very wise way of putting it, that he is actually not going to do exactly this, but he's going to, as with everything, it's the art of the deal. You come in big, and then you settle for half of what you were hoping to get with the big presentation, and then you got 50% more than you thought you were going to get. I mean, that's the way Trump does this over and over and over. And before we move on to the next question, I will say that my thoughts, you know, we've discussed this before on the show and said, in terms of immigration even, that the left really wants everybody, including the right, to think about this through the eyes of the illegal immigrant. And we said, fair. Okay,
yeah.
We can do that. We can think about this through the eyes of the illegal immigrant. And we came to the conclusion that if my life were as bad as some of these people's lives, I'd look for a better life too. That doesn't make it right. That doesn't make it legal. That doesn't mean that you can't have good immigration policy.
Right.
It just means that looking at it through the eyes of the illegal immigrant is a fair perspective. What we were asking others to do, so we being the right, I guess, in this situation, asking the left to do, is that's fine. We can look at it through the eyes of the illegal immigrant. Can you look at it through anybody else's eyes? And the answer seems to be no. But can you look at it through the eyes of a parent who lost their daughter to an illegal immigrant? Can you look at it through the eyes of a legal immigrant?
How did they feel about it?
Who
did it the right way?
Can you look at it through the eyes of a community that's been overwhelmed by illegal immigrants and it's straining all their resources? Can you look at it through the eyes of a government? Can you look at it through the eyes of Mayor Eric Adams, who's trying to figure out what to do for New York City because he's so overwhelmed by it? Can you look at it through the eyes of anybody else? And that's what we're asking you to do. We'll do what you're asking. Can you do what we're asking?
Yeah.
That's a fair proposal.
Yeah, and like the deep understanding of this that I want my friends on the left to understand is you're not doing anybody, like, it feels good to help that immigrant because you heard their story and their story is very unfortunate and very sad. But whenever you take that person and you put them in a position like you did, New York City is a great example, where you have overstrained the resources, you've overflowed schools, you've, like, basically, I remember them taking parks away so they can build encampments for where people can live. When you overflow the resources and you cause hardship, not just for the immigrants that are fleeing what you say is hardship, you're causing hardship for your own citizens, and not normal hardship, like excessive hardship. You're not doing a plus positive or a plus. Yeah, it's not a positive on the morality front. You're actually being immoral and causing harm and causing more harm to everybody. Because you're motivated by the story. But you've also got to think about this from a logistical standpoint.
Look at it through anybody else's eyes. Really, not just, all we're asking is look at it through other lenses than just the one.
And the people that whose lenses you're looking at it through are not bad people for saying, hey, we can't do this.
The reason I even bring up that example is because I was trying to do the same thing with the Gaza thing. The left is saying, and not all the left, but the really far left, and there are even some people on the right, I think, who would say this. So it's very fair. We could really take red and blue off of this issue in a lot of ways. It's hard to do, but we'll try to, and say, okay, if the far left, and I'm referring to people like, for whatever reason, I followed John Cusack on Twitter. He is a huge proponent for Gaza. That's all he talks about is the people of Gaza. Okay, if you're really that invested in protecting the people of Gaza, my assumption is you're asking me to look at it through their eyes. Even this issue, look at it through their eyes. Okay, fair. That's fine. I'll try to do that. Then if I'm going to do that, I'm not going to look at it. One thing I won't do is look at it through the eyes of Hamas, because Hamas is terrible and terrorist and evil, and they murder people for the sake of their race. These are awful people and a terrible ideology. I'm not going to look at it through the eyes of Hamas. So I'm assuming when you ask me to look through the eyes, you're asking me to look through the eyes of a civilian, an innocent bystander, a conscientious objector. I don't know that you're actually asking me that, but I'm going to assume the best and say that's what you're asking me to do, is look at it through the eyes of these sort of innocent people who've just been caught up in this system. The problem is the system indoctrinates people from the moment of birth into radical Islam. So what do you do if that's the prevailing ideology? How do you find those few people who are conscientious objectors, who don't want any of this Hamas stuff, who don't want to have anything to do with terrorism? Well, first of all, that's really, really tough. But then let's say that you can find some of them. And let's say it's just kids, you know? Mm-hmm. Let's say it's the innocent kids, poor kids, they're being brought up in this. It's no fault of their own, but by the time they become adults, they have chosen that way of life. But when they're kids, they're not really choosing that. Okay, look at it through their eyes. Really, great. Then what's the best for them? That's my question. And this is really the question I think is the most important to be asking throughout this entire debate that maybe you're going to have at a bar this weekend. Maybe you're having it with your family. Maybe you're having it on social media. Whose eyes are you asking me to look at this through? Are you asking me to look at it through Hamas's eyes? Because that makes you bad. Don't ask me to do that. I will look at it through the conscientious objector, maybe the average citizen's eyes, who may not want to be a part of this, although I question how many of them there are. And I question, and I wonder if the answer isn't, wouldn't you want a fresh start? I mean, especially for kids.
Yeah.
If you put them right back in this situation again, you're going to get the same outcome. But if you don't, if you are going to change it, don't you want a new future? If you look at those pictures Carolyn Leavitt just showed, you weren't able to see it because you listened to the radio, but you've seen pictures of Gaza. It is absolutely destroyed.
Yeah.
And by the way, Gaza, if you're wondering, the Gaza Strip is about twice the size, I looked this up, as St. Louis City proper. So that's about how big it is, twice the size of St. Louis. So it's not a huge area, but it is basically gone. Like, they don't have hardly any shelter. Like she said, they don't have running water. If your solution is, no, let's just keep them there, that's actually not really looking at it through their eyes at all. That's looking at it through your eyes, and you're casting your sort of preconceived notions. So, and again, there's a lot to this, and that's why I like listen to the experts and listen to people discuss it, because I think that is the point of this, is to be a conversation starter to a really, really difficult situation that doesn't have an easy solution. Otherwise, we would have already solved this thing. We're going a little long here. Wiggins America is coming up next, as usual, although it will be led by Ethan, and we'll get to more of this YouTube live chat poll. Grade Elon Musk and Doge's efforts so far. A, B, C, D, or F. Let us know what you think, and we'll see you on the other side of this break.
General, for this new position that you've now been sworn into.
Well, I can just say very simply, for me, overall, very simple. Make America great again. That's what we're going to do. We're going to make America great again. And she's going to take crime out of the system. As much as anybody can do that, she's going to do it.
We're going to make America safe again.
Man, of all the things that have happened in the last 2.5 weeks, none of them have involved the Department of Justice yet, because we just got an attorney general today. How crazy is that? No, what's going to happen now? What's going to happen after we have a Tulsi Gabbard in charge of the Director of National Intelligence, or RFK Jr. as Health and Human Services Secretary? By the way, all of them moving forward. Bondi's been confirmed as AG. The Intelligence Committee has voted to move forward with Tulsi Gabbard's nomination, and the Senate panel advances RFK Jr.'s nomination.
So, do we know when those will be?
I don't know the exact date. If it's been announced, it was today, and I haven't seen it yet. But I know that it takes at least a week, if not 2 weeks.
Yeah, they've got to be able to break the filibuster, or cloture. Ryan Schmelz talked about this earlier this week. He said it's a very boring word, and he could bore us to death with it. But they've got to have enough votes to break cloture to actually get to the vote. So there's a filibuster, and they'll delay it as long as they can, and then they'll have the vote, and then what's going to happen is going to happen. And we will have our RFKs.
Yeah, I was actually doing a full PowerPoint last night on cloture, but I fell asleep.
He put himself asleep.
Yeah, plus we do radio. I'm like, why am I doing this?
Yeah,
like,
why would you create a visual for an audio show?
I do this so often. I get into things and I'm like, this is worthless.
It just, that is a very telling process, or I guess a very telling example of just how much the two sides just don't like each other. I mean, it goes both ways, but it's just like, come on, guy, really?
Can't we all
so
just
annoying.
Get along?
As someone who is, like, I would say on the outer edge of politics where I'm involved, but not like really deep into it, more so like
we've had to get like, you guys, involved, haven't we?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, you have. It's very much so like, why? It's so unnecessary.
Is there an aspect to of it though? Because you're a sports guy.
Mm-hmm.
I've loved sports in my life. Brad has too. Mm-hmm. Although yeah.
You're wearing your
sports.
Michigan State shirt today.
I don't know why. I just like the shirt. But is politics at least somewhat sporting to you? Like, is there an aspect of it that's enough of the back and forth, the game, that you're able to kind of participate in that way?
Trump definitely helps because he's such a wild card and he does things so differently. I think that I was 16 when Trump first came into office, and it was right around the time that I started getting interested in things. I don't know if I would find myself nearly as interested if, let's say, I was born 4 years earlier and I was joining around, or I was getting involved around the time that Mitt Romney was running for president in 2012. Different, it just feels like a different
story. Definitely.
Oh, so yeah. I think it definitely has to do with Trump and just him being in the mix. But I also don't think that it's much of a coincidence that during a good chunk of the time that Biden was president, at least early on, I kind of like my involvement within politics took a pretty decent dip as well.
Well, politics is strategic all the time. And to me, that's part of the interest of it, is watching people kind of, and especially Trump, like you said, not to always bring it back to Trump, but the dude is a mastermind in strategy. Like nobody's ever seen before in the White House. I mean, he did this so much so that he announces this big thing in Gaza last night, and we all go, what's he really mean?
Right. You
know?
Yeah.
Because we're all watching the strategy. We don't know exactly what he's got up his sleeve.
I was scrolling on Twitter last night, and a video popped up of one of the main members of Shark Tank. And it was the short blonde-haired lady. No, not Kevin O'Leary.
Oh, I saw this. It was Barbara Corcoran.
Yes. And someone asked her about Trump and her relationship with Trump. And she called him the best salesman she has ever met in his life. And that's obviously that's high regard coming from her, someone that's, you know, made her name off of sales. But to kind of dove in a little bit as to why he is so good at it and talked through like the Plaza Hotel and the selling of that and how pretty much all that land along the, is it the East River? Like,
yeah, she gave a specific example.
Yeah,
I watched him do this with some businessmen. I think it was from Japan.
Yes.
And he walked into a room and they had no interest in whatever he was selling. Mm-hmm. And by the end of the couple weeks of him talking to them, they had bought everything he was offering.
Yeah. He said he's just so good at finding like that specific like niche with the person or finding the weakness of the person
mm-hmm.
and exploiting that to his advantage to where like, you know, and in this case, you know, it talked about how he used that with the American people and finding, you know, it's not the person's weakness. But
she called it a weakness.
Yes.
To me, what she was talking about was more the motivation button.
Yes.
He was able to find that motivator thing and just press it.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. Yeah.
Ready for Wiggins America?
Yep, let's hit it.
Wiggins! Oh! Wiggins!
When am I going to get my own version of Wiggins America? You
when
know?
You make it.
You got
to
make it.
But it still has to say Wiggins America.
Define making it.
No, when you create the open.
Oh, when I literally. Yeah. I thought
not
you
when
meant,
you
like,
make
when
it in
I
this business.
It, I come back in
you're
10
here talking
years.
On the
I
radio.
I come back in 10 years like, I want my Wiggins America.
Yeah. Why hasn't it happened?
Like Ryan Wiggins. He hasn't been here for 8 years.
Yeah. It took this many years and then I got an open.
So I don't know if you guys were aware, but my generation, or at least a good chunk of my generation, just absolutely sucks.
Mm-hmm.
They're terrible.
Chunk.
Can't stand them.
Mm-hmm.
I think that older generations would argue that, well, yes, generations are definitely getting softer, but when you look at my generation specifically, it feels like the pioneer for people just wanting things given to them. Would you guys agree with that?
So like an entitlement attitude?
Yes.
I'll grant that. I don't know that they're necessarily all soft, but I'll grant the entitlement.
It's a gradient, because it's gotten more and more. So it's not just all of a sudden Gen Z is entitled. It's every generation that comes along is a little bit more, a little bit more, and probably at that age, you're always a little, you seem more entitled.
Mm-hmm.
So like even when the boomers were hippies, everybody's like, they're entitled.
No,
but
that's
they,
fair.
They were at that age.
That's fair. No, that's a good way of putting it. Well, I found this. There was this video that popped up. You know, speaking of scrolling on Twitter, that I've seen a couple of different times, but I've kind of just blown by it. But I figured this would kind of be a good subject matter. And have you guys ever heard of time blindness?
I've heard this phrase used.
No.
So basically, and this video is going to explain it a little bit, but time blindness is the inability to be able to show up on time. This video's going, or this audio is going to explain this young lady's
phenomenon of time blindness.
This young lady's predicament here in this situation, applying for a job and bringing up time blindness.
So I just got yelled at for asking a very reasonable question. So I'm applying to go somewhere, and I just wanted to know, are there accommodations for people who struggle with time blindness and being on time, you know? And then the person I was with interrupted and acted like I was asking something else. And then when we were done, they actually started yelling at me and saying that accommodations for time blindness doesn't exist. And if you struggle with being on time, you'll never be able to get a job, you know, provided you're trying your absolute best to be there. And then they're like, your stupid generation wants to destroy the workplace.
Yep. Yep. Yep.
You don't just get to be late and then, well, but I named it.
They just
I have a condition.
I love that someone was either that level of embarrassed for her that they just ignored it, or just were like, you're not even like going to be an option for this job, so we're not gonna. For either way, they were ignoring it. Which I thought was absolutely hilarious.
I just got yelled at.
right when I said that, Annie Fry, who is sick today and not here, but it's made this because she doesn't have a voice. She can't talk on the radio without a voice. She's chiming in on the chat and says, time blindness is caused by being late and inconsiderate. Stop renaming things so you can be a sucky person.
Here's part two of this video.
And yeah, I think that a culture where workers are just cut off because they struggle with being on time, when there's other solutions that we can look to. I think that just anybody who thinks it's okay to just treat people like that, yeah, that culture needs to be dismantled.
And what then are I the ask other that person, solutions?
How can you feel good about yourself upholding this kind of system?
Hmm.
And then to think, I'm entitled. No, if people think it's okay to treat others like this, that's entitlement.
What? I had to.
What she says in there, that there are other solutions to this, but like many people we've been talking about in the rest of this hour, what are those solutions?
Yeah.
Isn't the solution still on you? How are other people going to accommodate this?
My favorite part is where she was asking for a special point of privilege because she has quote-unquote time blindness, but you're the privileged person for not making that available for her.
Yeah, I don't understand.
Like, I'm late, it's your fault.
That, exactly, right. Because I have this issue, and I even looked it up. Thankfully, I did, you know, I was expecting just by looking this up to find some terrible article saying, like, this is why the workplace should support time blindness and allow people. There wasn't any of that. Thankfully, we're not at that point in society. Give it 5 years, maybe even less.
But, I don't know, this is New America.
You got a point. But, I just was fascinated that there are people with the audacity, that level of entitlement, and I love that at the end she even pointed out, this isn't entitlement, this is something that I deserve. That's which entitlement!
Which means people have been telling her this over and over. This is your fault, you're the one that needs to change, you're entitled. I need to do a video and tell everybody why all of those things are not true. And I'm going to name it time blindness.
Annie, let me know how
I
did.
Was this better?
Was this worse than
normal
against
America? No, she asked this question, you have like 10 seconds to answer it. Ethan, why are your people like this?
I don't represent my people.
All right, that's sufficient. That's sufficient. Thank you for participating, both Ethan and Annie from home. Annie, you can continue to be a part of these conversations if you want. In fact, you can be a part of all of it if you log on and you're on our live stream. We'll continue next. We're going to have Mark Cox join us next hour.